Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gorton Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gorton. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegorton.org. Again, that's georgegorton.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on hospitals when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said, well, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School when he said this, quote, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And it's worse than that, he said. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can order yours right now. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegorton.org. Again, that's georgegorton.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Hospitals. Where could you be safer than in the hospital? It's the place where all sick people want to go. When you're sick, you want somebody to take me to the hospital. Sometimes you may be so sick that you want to go to the hospital as rapidly as possible and call an ambulance so that you can have the fastest possible route, the fastest possible trip that you can get from where you are to the hospital. But are you really sure you want to go to the hospital? Because there are some things about hospitals that you probably have never heard before, and so I thought I'd tell it to you right now. Now, of course, when you're sick, you're out of your head. You're out of your mind. You're not yourself. And so you have to make a decision. Well, I feel real bad, and I don't want to die, and I'm afraid that if I don't do something for this sickness or this malady, that I might die. And so here in America, all of our lives, we've heard about the doctors. Doctors here in this country are like priests in other people's languages and in other people's cultures. The doctor here takes the place of the priest, and the hospital is like the temple. You go to the temple for certain sacraments. It's a religious experience is what it really boils down to. But there are 10 things that your hospital won't tell you, so I thought I'll tell you what your hospital won't. Now, treatment errors are common in hospitals, and finding someone in charge can seem impossible, and patients sometimes wind up sicker than when they arrived. So here's a tip. Try to avoid hospitals late at night and in July. Oops, wrong kidney. Well, in recent years, errors in treatment have become a serious problem for hospitals, ranging from operations on the wrong body parts to medication mix-ups. Now, at least 1.5 million patients are harmed every year from being given the wrong drugs, according to the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences. That's an average of one person per U.S. hospital per day. That's 130,000 fatalities per year from giving you the wrong drug. Not an illegal drug. No, sirree, Bob. They don't sell the illegal drugs in the hospital. They give you the legal drugs in the hospital. But sometimes they give you the wrong legal drug. Sometimes they give you too much or not enough of it. And it causes certain 1.5 million patients' injuries every year. Just from drugs alone, 130,000 deaths. Now, one reason these mistakes persist is that only 10% of hospitals are fully computerized and have a central database to track allergies and diagnoses, says Robert Watcher. He's the chief of medical services at UC San Francisco Medical Center. But signs of change are emerging. More than 3,000 U.S. hospitals, or 75% of the country's beds, have signed on for a campaign by the not-for-profit Institute for Healthcare Improvement to implement prevention measures such as multiple checks on drugs. Though the system is improving, it still has a long way to go. Patients should always have a friend, a relative, or patient advocate from the hospital staff at their bedside to take notes and to make sure the right medications are being dispensed. Hey, that's kind of a wild new idea, isn't it? You're in the hospital, and in comes the nurse, and they've got some pills for you to take. And right away, you've got your bedside partner there. He looks at the medication, and then he looks at the chart and makes sure that the nurse bringing the medication to you is bringing the right stuff and in the right amounts. Isn't that just special? Now, infections in the chain of command. You may leave sicker than when you came in. You know, a week after Leandra Wise had surgery to remove a benign tumor, the high school senior felt well enough to host a sleepover. But later that weekend, she was vomiting and running a fever. Thinking it was the flu, her parents took her back to the hospital. Wise never came out. It wasn't the flu, but rather it was a deadly surgical infection. And about 2 million people a year contract hospital-related infections, and about 90,000 die, according to the National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The recent increase in antibiotic-resistant bugs and mounting cost of health care, to which infections add about $4.5 billion a year annually, have mobilized the medical community to implement processes designed to increase infections. These include using clippers rather than a razor to shave surgical sites and administering antibiotics before surgery, but stopping them soon after to prevent drug resistance. For all of modern medicine's advances, the best way to minimize infection risk is very low tech. Just make sure that any hospital staffers who touch you have washed their hands first. Tubes and catheters are also a source of infection, and patients should ask daily if they're really necessary. Did you know that your hospital staff may not have washed their hands? Yeah, that's right. Let's suppose that your nurse just came out of the room next door to yours and walks over to you. Well, what did she touch in the room next door, and what does the guy next door to you have? AIDS? Herpes? VD, and then she comes over and now she's working on you. Has she washed her hands first, or your doctor, did they wash their hands? Well, if they're like half of the hospital staff, the answer is no. Half of the time, 50%, they do not wash their hands between patients. Isn't that just real special? Well, Helen Haskell repeatedly told nurses something didn't seem right with her son, Lewis, who was recovering from surgery to repair a defect in his chest wall. For nearly 2 days, she kept asking for a veteran or attending doctor, and when the first-year resident's assessment seemed off, but Haskell couldn't convince the right people that her son was deteriorating. It was like an alternate reality, she says. I had no idea of where I could go. 30 hours after her son first complained of intense pain, the South Carolina teenager died of a perforated ulcer. In a sea of blue scrubs, getting the attention of the right person can be very difficult. Just who's in charge here? Nurses don't report to doctors, but rather to a nurse supervisor. And your personal doctor has very little say over radiology or the labs running on your tests, which are managed by the hospital. 10 best hospitals for kids. Well, some facilities employ hospitalists. That's specialists in hospitals. Hospitalists, doctors who act as point people to conduct flows of information. Haskell urges patients to know the hospital hierarchy, read name tags, get the attending physician's phone number, and if all else fails, demand a nurse supervisor, likely the highest ranking person who has or who is accessible quickly. And this is also good advice to get the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence for a wrongful death action after your loved one dies in the hospital. After all, you need to know who the doctors were and who the people in charge were and what the names, addresses, and phone numbers are. Now, everything is negotiable, even your hospital bill. So when it comes to getting paid, hospitals have their work cut out for them. Medical bills are a major cause of bankruptcy in the United States, and when collectors are put on the case, they take up to 25% of what is claimed. That's according to Mark Field Friedman, the founder of Billing Consultant Premium Healthcare Services, and that leaves room for some bargaining. Let's take a case of Logan Roberts. The 26-year-old had started work as a business analyst near Atlanta, Georgia, but he had no health insurance, and when he was rushed to the emergency room for an appendectomy, the uninsured can pay three times more for procedures, says Nora Johnson, the senior director of Medical Billing Advocates of America. Let me repeat that for you people out there. Maybe you didn't know this. You see, if you don't have health insurance, and you go to the emergency room or you're rushed to the hospital with an emergency, you'll be charged up to three times more for the services delivered than if you had insurance. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, in a sea of blue scrubs, remember, you're looking for the person who knows what the hell's going on. Well, Roberts was billed $21,000, and I was like, holy cow, he says, that's four times my net worth, $21,000 for an appendectomy. After advice from an advocacy group, the Access Project, Roberts spoke with hospital administrators, telling them he couldn't pay in full. Hospitals frequently work with patients offering payment plans or discounts. But to get that payment plan or to get that discount, you have to knock on the right door. You have to look for the Office of Patient Accounts. I'm going to write that down. You're looking for the Office of Patient Accounts or the Financial Assistance Office. They may have a different name, Financial Assistance Office. Because it paid off for Roberts, whose bill was sliced to $4,100, just 20% of the original bill. Well, that isn't too shabby. There's another little point that you might want to bring up. We had a deal come up here at the law school. One of our staff here needed a surgery, and so we went in and negotiated for the person. went to the doctor, and the original tally was they wanted $10,000. This is a doctor, and they want $10,000 for the surgery. So we inquired as to whether or not there was a discount for people who didn't have insurance and were paying cash. And the answer to that was, well, yeah, there was a discount. Well, how much is the discount? Well, you see, that's negotiable. So we ended up paying $5,400 for this $10,000 bill. So tuck that one away in your heart. It was nearly half price going in, but you got to pay cash in advance. So rather than waiting until you have this appendix problem and then rushing to the hospital, which in this guy's case worked out to be even better, he only paid 20%. You go to the hospital, you go to the doctor, and you say, look, I'm paying cash, and what kind of discount program do you have? And if they give you any static, you know, there's other hospitals and there's other doctors. But business is business. That's the bottom line. And a lot of times, hospitals get stiffed, and so do doctors, for their services. So if the doctor knows he's going to get paid, and he's going to get paid in $100 bills cash up front, he'll wheel and deal with you. So will the hospital. So be smart about your bills. Yes, we take your insurance, but we're not sure about the anesthesiologist. Now, the last thing on your mind before surgery is making sure that every doctor involved is in your network. But since the answer is often no for anesthesiologists, pathologists, and radiologists, what's a patient going to do? Well, Los Angeles entertainment lawyer and patent attorney Michael A. Weiss repeatedly turned away out-of-network pain management doctors on a recent visit to a hospital. Now, you won't necessarily need to go as far as Weiss did, but do ask for someone in your network if you're alert enough, if you got enough smart. If it's an emergency and you're stuck with an out-of-network doctor, then call your insurance company to help resolve the issue. If it's elective surgery, ask a scheduling nurse in the surgeon's office to find specialists that are in your plan. So advise the South Bend, Indiana billing sleuth Mary Jane Stoll. Okay, so here again, let's suppose you're going to have elective surgery. You're going to have a facelift or something like that. And you've got insurance, and maybe the insurance covers this. But maybe the insurance doesn't cover two or three people unless they're on the hospital staff, or. So get your ducks in a row. You know, it's like buying a car or buying a house or anything else, you know. Ask some questions. And when you don't get the answers that you want to hear, go ask another competitor. How's that for doing business? You know, most people complain about hospital bills, and they complain about doctors and overcharging, but, you know, they don't go out and shop like they would for an automobile. Now, people, when they want to buy a car, you know, they're out looking around finding the best possible deal available. Where do I get all the options, and where do I get the best interest rate, and so on? But they never ask those kinds of questions of doctors, hospitals. And even if you've got health insurance, that doesn't mean that your health insurance provider is going to pay for the services. You may think that this surgery is covered under your health plan, but you'd better ask your insurance company ahead of time, because you're liable to get a big shock when you get the bill from the hospital and it says you owe them $20,000, and you say, well, what about my insurance? And they say, well, it doesn't cover that. And that's because insurance plans are written by insurance companies and their legal staffs, and they put all kinds of wiggle rooms and special clauses in the plan that excludes most of the liabilities that they don't want to pay for. And they word it in legalese so that when you read the plan, it sounds like that it covers this particular procedure, but when you get into the nitty-gritty, it's excluded. You know, if the procedure isn't performed on the third Tuesday of an odd-numbered month in an even-numbered year, it may not cover you and your plan. Now, if you know your procedure will be out of network, call the hospital billing department to negotiate. It'll likely point you to a patient representative or the director of billing. And once you've dealt with the hospital, then try the surgeon or other specialists involved. Some hospitals will back you in those discussions, Friedman says. Now, sometimes the hospital will bill you twice. Now, cracking the code of medical bills, and you may find a few surprises. Charges for services that you never received, or charges for routine items such as gowns and gloves that should not have been billed separately. Clerical errors are often the reason for mistakes. One transposed number in a billing code can result in a charge for placing a catheter in an artery versus a vein. That's a difference of more than $3,900, Stull says. Okay, now let's think about this. Here's a clerical error, and it's often the reason for mistakes. It can be caused by just one number being transposed. It can be a number in the billing code itself, not the number of the dollars and cents, but the number that's in the billing code. It's an 047 procedure rather than an 074, putting down 47 instead of 74, transposing those numbers. Can make the difference of $3,900 in the two procedures. Now, just because you get a bill from the hospital for $20,000 doesn't mean that that's correct. Now, you may get a bill from the hospital for $20,000 because you don't have insurance or because you didn't take the time to investigate first. Now, here's a couple of pointers for you. Let's suppose you need a hip replacement surgery. Hip replacement surgery, which costs $30,000 here in the United States, can be done handily for $8,000 in New Delhi, India. In fact, many third world countries have built state-of-the-art medical facilities in their countries, then sent their doctors to the United States for medical training. And then those doctors go back to India, Pakistan, the Philippines, and then they work for those hospitals that cater to Americans that don't want to spend $100,000 for bypass surgery here in America and can get the same bypass surgery done in the Philippines, for instance, for $15,000 that costs $100,000 here, or an $8,000 hip replacement that costs $30,000 here, and so on down the line. Now, of course, this requires that you do a little research and pay attention, you know, to what's going on around you. That's assuming, of course, that you're going to pay the bill or that you don't have insurance. So if you know your procedure is going to be out of network, call the hospital billing department and negotiate before this job is done. Don't wait until after the procedure has been accomplished. Don't sign the check and just tell the salesman to fill in the rest for you after you leave. Make sure that you've dotted all of your I's and crossed all of your T's and know what it is that you're going to get. Now, for instance, this person I'm telling you about with the hip replacement. This person has allergies and has medical problems, and there's different kinds of hips you can put in there. There's different metals. In fact, one hip replacement, he found out, was ceramic. And after doing all of the research in the various products available, he elected to have the ceramic hip replacement. Just like buying an automobile. Now, Corvette may be a hell of a neat automobile, but maybe what you need is a four-wheel drive Land Rover where you live. Corvettes work fine in Miami, but not so well in Isabella, Missouri. Now, here where I live in Ozark County, a Corvette's about like having six thumbs on your right hand. Nice thing to look at, but ain't very nice to drive up and down the cow lane. Same thing's true here with medical procedures. There are all kinds of hearts and heart transplants and kidney transplants and hip replacements, and you ought to do your homework and read the literature and then make a decision. You know, is this the best for me in my circumstance? And what's this going to cost? Ask the doctor, what are you charging, doc? What's the bill? What are the easy payment plan? What do you have available? You don't have to have health insurance. You can go and negotiate this deal directly with the hospital and with the doctor. That's what this young fellow did. He doesn't have health insurance. And he's not paying $30,000 for the hip replacement either. I think the total price on the hip replacement here in the United States, ceramic, is under $15,000, which is about half what the normal $30,000 hip replacement is. Now, he could get it done for half that in New Delhi, but he figured, ah, heck, for an extra, you know, $7,500, he said, hell, I'll just do it right here in the States. And so how do you figure out if your bill has correct codes or duplicates your charges? Well, start by asking for an itemized bill with miscellaneous items clearly defined. Some telltale mistakes. Charging for 3 days when you stayed in a hospital overnight. A circumcision for your newborn girl. Or for drugs that you never received. Ask the hospital's billing office for a key to decipher the charges, or you can go hire an expert to spot these billing problems and deal with the insurance company and the doctors. You can find one at the Medical Billing Advocates of America. That's called the Medical Billing Advocates of America. Their expertise typically will cost $65 an hour. Or maybe a percentage of the savings or some combination of the two. So if you want to be your own billing sleuth, then talk to the highest ranking administrator that you can find in the hospital, finance, or accounts office to begin untangling any mistaken codes. So the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to use codes, and we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. We're not going to say that the hospital does this routinely like Walmart does, you know. But I suspect, and that's just my personal opinion, you know, I suspect that when they send out the bill, it's easier to charge you $21,000 and negotiate it down to $10,000 than it is to send out the bill for $10,000 and then tell you we made a mistake and the bill is really $21,000. So they start high. And it's been my experience in life. You know, you can quote a price to 10 people. Let's suppose you want to sell a cow to some guy and you tell him the price of this cow is $5,000. One person in 10 will just write you the check. Nine people out of 10 are going to ask you, well, what kind of a discount do you have for cash? Or what if I buy two cows? Was there a discount? And so on down the line. Hospitals work the same way. They just send you a bill and they say, well, if we send this guy a bill for $21,000, one person in 10 will shut up and pay it. You can rest assured that there is no insurance company in America that takes a hospital bill at face value. Not a one. The insurance company takes that bill and they run it through the billing codes to make sure all the billing codes are correct. And then they'll go to the patient and say, well, let's see, we have a circumcision here for your baby daughter. Did your baby daughter receive a circumcision? Well, no. Well, then we don't want to pay that $500. But you'll be amazed at how many people don't even look at the bill. They just send it off to the insurance company. Let them worry about it. Or they just complain about it and pay it. And so watch those hospital billing codes, because about 100% of the time there's going to be an error in the billing code. And if there isn't, the hospital administrator that sent out the bill wasn't doing his job correctly. His job is to overcharge. And then if you're not smart enough to catch the overcharges, let's suppose they overcharge you for 10 items and you catch 6 of them. Well, okay, well, they still got away with overcharging you for 4, didn't they? So they got paid for everything they were entitled to, plus they overcharged you for 4 items because you could only catch 6. So pay attention, boys and girls. That's another one of those things that the hospital won't tell you. All right, now hang on. I got to give you a reminder here. We're talking about hospitals. But in the meantime, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Talking about hospitals here, this article comes from moneycentral.msn.com. Again, this is http://articles.moneycentral.msn.com. All right, talking about hospitals over here. All hospitals are not created equal. So how do you tell a good hospital from a bad hospital? Well, for one thing, nurses. When it comes to their own families, medical workers favor institutions that attract nurses. But these type institutions are harder to find as the country's nursing shortage intensifies. By the year 2020, 44 states could be facing a serious deficit. Low nurse staffing directly affected patient outcomes represented and resulting in more problems such as urinary tract infections, shock, and gastrointestinal bleeding, according to a 2001 study by Harvard and Vanderbilt University professors. So you're looking for a hospital that is fully staffed by nurses. When you find a hospital that isn't fully staffed, the nurses don't want to work there. Why is that? So here's another thing to consider. Your local hospital may have been great for welcoming your child into the world, but just because you had your baby in that hospital doesn't mean it's the best place to undergo open heart surgery. So find the medical center with the longest track record and the best survival rate, and the highest volume in the procedure. You don't want to be the team's third hip replacement, says Samantha Collier, the Vice President of Medical Affairs at HealthGrades, which rates hospitals. So that's what we did here for our young man here. We went to the doctor and we asked him the question, well, how many of these hip replacements have you done? And he said, I don't know. I don't keep track of them. So we ask, well, have you done 100? He says, oh, God, I've done more than 100. I do about one a week. I've been doing it for 25 years. But I don't keep track of how many I've done. So we figured one a week, that's four a month. That's 48 a year. We rounded it off to 50 times 25 years. We figured this guy's done this hip replacement thing about 1,250 times in his career. Well, you know, if a guy has rebuilt an engine 1,250 times and you bring your engine in to have it rebuilt, he probably is good as any and better than most. Now, the next thing is the hospital. Does this hospital do very many of these hip replacements? Do they have the facilities there to do that? And the answer is that in Springfield, Missouri, yes, they do hip replacements there quite often. In fact, the doctor who does the one a week is just one doctor out of three who uses that hospital to do the hip replacements. And so, assuming that we've got two other doctors in town and they're all doing, you know, one a week, that's about 150 a month. And then they're doing them here in the St. John's Medical Center, so that's 150. I'd say that a hospital that's doing 150 hip replacements a month and a doctor that's done 1,200 is probably a pretty competent bunch. That doesn't mean that you're coming out of there alive, but it means that your chances are a hell of a lot better than coming out of some institution where they don't do that. Now, it just happens that over in India, they're specializing in these kinds of routine, and you know, hip replacement, knee replacement surgery, things like that, are pretty routine medical procedures. It's kind of like taking your car in for a tune-up and an oil change. I mean, these guys are just doing these knee replacements and hip replacements pretty routinely. The American Nurses Association website lists magnet hospitals, those most attractive to nurses, and a call to a hospital's nurse supervisor should yield the nurse-to-patient ratio, says Gail Van Kinnegan. She's a registered nurse and a co-author of How to Survive Your Hospital Stay. She also suggests calling the hospital's quality control or risk management office to get infection statistics, and asking your doctor how frequently the hospital has done a certain procedure. Though reporting these statistics is still voluntary, more hospitals are doing so on sites like one of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which compares hospitals against national averages in certain areas, including how well they follow recommended steps to treat common conditions, says Carmelia Coyle, the Senior Vice President for Policy at the American Hospital Association. So again, doing a little homework, you'll find that your hospital over here has a rating. Are they above or below the national average? Are they sued more often for malpractice than other hospitals, say 35, 40, 50% above the national average? Every hospital is going to get sued for malpractice. But where are they ranked? Now, here's how to improve your odds. Most ERs are in need of some urgent care themselves. A new study from the Institute of Medicine found that hospital emergency departments are overburdened. They're underfunded, and they are ill-prepared to handle disasters as the number of people turning to ERs for primary care keeps rising. An ambulance is turned away from an ER once every minute due to overcrowding, according to the study. This situation is exacerbated by shortages in many of the on-call backup services for cardiologists, orthopedists, and neurosurgeons, and it's getting worse. Currently, 73% of ER directors report inadequate coverage by on-call specialists, versus 67% in 2004. Now, that's according to a survey conducted by the American College of Emergency Physicians. Now, here's some best hospitals for kids. If you can, avoid the ER, that's the emergency room, between 3 p.m. and 1 a.m. 3 p.m. and 1 a.m. It's called the busiest shift. For the shortest wait, early morning, anywhere from 4 a.m. to 9 a.m. is your best bet. If you're having severe symptoms, such as the worst headache of your life or chest pains, alert the triage nurse manager, not just the person that's checking you in. That's a clerk. You need the triage nurse manager so that you can get seen sooner, says David Shearer. He's an anesthesiologist and author of Dr. David Shearer's Hospital Survival Guide. Triage nurses are the traffic cops in the emergency room, and they are your ticket to getting seen as quickly as possible. There's no point going to the ER with a heart attack and then sit there for 5 hours and die. In many big city hospitals, it's not uncommon for you to go to the emergency room and sit there for 5 hours before you get seen. And that's in the emergency room. Hell, you could go to the local doctor out of the Yellow Pages and get seen in many cases faster than you can at the emergency room. So take a look in your location and find out, well, what's the average time that you're going to get seen by your ER physician if you're taken to the ER in your local area? It may well be that the hospital closest to you is not the place you want to go. In fact, if you were in downtown Boston, you might get seen sooner by getting in an ambulance and going to a town outside of Boston to another hospital and another ER. It may be an hour's ride from where you are to that hospital, but you may get seen in 15 or 20 minutes, an hour's ride away, but you may go 15 minutes down to the local hospital in downtown Boston and wait 5 hours and die before they can get to you. Now, avoid the hospital, especially the hospital ER room, in July. Avoid it like the plague. So if you can, stay out of the hospital during the summer months, and especially during the month of July. That's the month when medical students become interns. Interns become residents. Residents become fellows. And the fellows become full-fledged doctors. In other words, a good portion of the staff at any given teaching hospital is new on the job. Summer hospital error and summer hospital horror stories aren't just medical lore. The adjusted mortality rate rises 4% in July, 4% in August for the average major teaching hospital, and that's according to the National Bureau of Economic Research. That means 8 to 14 more deaths occur at major teaching hospitals than would normally occur without the turnover at any other time of the year other than July and August. Now, another scheduling tip, try to book surgeries first thing in the morning, and preferably early in the week when doctors are at their best and before schedules get backed up, Shearer says. All right, let's think about that. You know, if you're scheduled on Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and the doctor, you know, he wants to get out of town, especially if you're in a big city, you know, like San Francisco or Oakland or Los Angeles. That doctor is going to work his heart out to make sure that he gets this surgery over just as soon as possible. Whereas Monday morning at 10 o'clock, you know, he's not going anywhere. And you're the first surgery of the week. So when you're scheduling your surgery in and the doctor says, well, what would be a good time for you? You tell him 10 o'clock on Monday morning. That would be a good time for me. And the doctor says, well, I've got a slot open Thursday afternoon at 2:30. You tell him, no, pass that one, and let's wait until you've got a Monday morning slot about 10 o'clock. First of all, the doctor's back from his weekend. And if you want to make sure the doctor's sober, you might want to schedule it for 10 o'clock on Tuesday, because I used to work out in the woods, and one time I was working behind a guy named Vern Schuster. Now, Vern used to start drinking. He only worked Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. He didn't work Fridays and Mondays. Now, normally people get fired that don't work on Fridays and Mondays, but old Vern, now, he was one of the best CAT scanners that God ever put breath into. Old Vern could build a mile of road a day with a D8 or a D9 CAT. A mile a day. Most guys could build about a mile a week And old Vern, you know, he was pretty handy with a cat. So he was pretty well tolerated. But, you know, on Thursday night when he came in and got out of the crummy and washed up, from then on he was down at the bar. And he'd be drinking all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and he'd be sobering up on Monday. And so Tuesday morning, old Vern, he was, you know, just about as perky as a squirrel, you know, at mulberry time. He was right out there ready to go to work. And you know, those doctors are a lot of them the same way. A lot of them are alcoholics. And they'll be tying one on over the weekend. So just to make sure, you know, that your doctor, you know, is sober when he's doing the surgery. And he's not hung over, you know, from, you know, Saturday and Sunday. You might want to schedule it on Tuesday, but for God's sake, don't do it on Friday. He's in a hurry to get out of town. Furthermore, he might have to do 3 of these surgeries on Friday in order to get everything in for the week, and you don't want this guy crowding. You want this guy fresh. You want to be the first guy he's doing in the morning, not the last guy at night. Now, sometimes we don't keep our mouths zipped. Now, contrary to what you might think, sharing patient information with a third party is often perfectly legal. You know, you've heard that, well, that's a doctor-patient privilege, or that's an attorney-client privilege, and we don't have to divulge it. It's true they don't have to, but do doctors keep their mouths closed about your medical condition? Well, contrary to what you might think, sharing this patient information with third parties is often perfectly legal, and in certain cases, the law allows your medical records to be disclosed without asking or even notifying you. For example, hospitals will hand over information regarding your treatment to other doctors, and it will readily share those details with insurance companies for payment purposes. Now, that means about 600,000 entities. If you get that number, write it down. 600,000 entities, hospitals, clinics, doctors, that are loosely involved in the healthcare system have access to that information. So if you went to your doctor last week and he told you to bend over and spread your butt so he could look up your you know what, and then he wrote that down and he put that in your medical file, there are 600,000 entities around America that can get that information. And here at the law school, for $1,600, $1,600, we didn't subscribe to it, but I'm just telling you it was offered to us, for $1,600, we can tie into that system and we would be number 600,001. And it would cost me $1,600. You can rest assured every insurance company in America is tied into that system. And your doctor takes all of your medical records and he puts your medical records in his computer. His computer is online. His computer is available to other doctors, other hospitals, other institutions. If you think that your medical records are private, you know, you're still living back in the 1750s or 1760s. There's no privacy in medicine. None. Zero. It's like having privacy on the telephone. Boys and girls, since 1963, every telephone manufactured in America has a built-in microphone right in it. So the old days when Mickey Spillane or somebody, you know, writing a detective book, you know, would write in some neat little story about how Officer So-and-So or Detective Schultz broke in at 2 o'clock in the morning and clandestinely planted a microphone in your office. You know, that's just bizarre nonsense. That's so ancient technology. Today, it's all in the telephone itself. In fact, when the FBI or your local police wants to listen to you talking on the telephone, they don't even have to leave their office. They just call the telephone company and say, put a tap on this number and wire it to this number so that I can listen to it in my office. That's the way the detective, he doesn't even have to leave his desk to listen to your telephone conversations and record them. Isn't that just real special? And then on top of that, the telephone company actually physically tape records electronically, of course, over a computer. They don't, you know, they're not out here using, you know, miles and miles of tape, you know, like we used to see back in the old days in the movies. You know, they're not doing that. They're tape recording by computer every telephone call that's made in America. And then, if you argue with them up to 2 or 3 months, you know, after the billing cycle, and you don't pay your bill, and you say, well, I didn't make that call to Paris, France. And they'll just play it back for you and say, well, here's the telephone call, and that's your voice, and that's your telephone number, and you initiated the call. It came off of your telephone, and you're going to pay it. See how they do that? Now, when the telephone company can tape record every telephone call, every syllable that you speak on your phone, and keep that for several months, then it's no big deal for the National Security Agency, you know, to go to the phone company and get those telephone calls. You know, that's just all of this flap that you hear about privacy and privacy issues is just so much of a bull manure. So it means 600,000 entries that are loosely involved in the healthcare system have access to that information. These parties may even pass on that data to their business partners, says Deborah Peel, the founder of Patient Privacy Rights Foundation in Austin, Texas. Now, a group called the Patient Privacy Rights Foundation. I mean, you might as well have the Virgin Whores Association of America. Boys and girls, you know, the subject matter virgin whore is an oxymoron. And Patient Privacy Rights Foundation is an oxymoron. There are no medical patient privacy rights. None. Zero. Zilch. You might as well understand that. Now, if you want to access your medical records, oh, that's another story. If you want to access your medical records, that's top secret. You can't have that unless you pay for it. But you don't have to steal them like Elaine did on Seinfeld after she learned that a doctor had marked her as a difficult patient. You're legally entitled to see, copy, and ask for corrections to your medical records. Now, that isn't all that easy to get. And if you want to test it, just ask your doctor for a copy of your medical records and see what he tells you. Now, as a matter of law, you may have to sue the doctor. You may have to bring him in to a show cause hearing, and with a motion and an order to compel. I mean, that may be what it takes. But for $1,600, you can get your own medical records. You can get them right off of the Internet. You don't have to leave your office, but you have to subscribe to the service. It's a little pricey. I'd say $1,600 was a little pricey. And I really didn't care whether or not you had hemorrhoids or not, so I didn't subscribe. I'm not really too concerned about people's medical conditions, but you can see that insurance companies are, because the insurance company, after all, the insurance company is on the hook now when you walk in and buy this insurance policy. So they want to know whether or not you've got cancer. And they want to know whether your mother died from cancer. And whether or not cancer is prevalent in your family or family history. So that they can exclude you from coverage. You know, private insurance companies, they only want to insure people that they can collect premiums from and don't have to pay out anything to. You see, the ideal insurance client is somebody who pays $10,000 a year in premiums for 70 years and then dies suddenly and with no medical bills and never gets sick a day in his life. He pays his premiums for 70 years, never collects a dime in claims. And now that's the perfect client for the insurance company. That's what they're all looking for. And in their quest to find these kinds of people, you know, they have to go through a lot of records and exclude a lot of people who make application for insurance policies. Insurance companies are businesses that are there to make money. They're not there as a public service to aid you in solving your problems with Hurricane Katrina, or in helping you to save your marriage or save your life or anything else. Insurance companies are there to make money. That's their only purpose for being. You know, the only purpose for business is profit. Businesses do not exist for any other purpose other than profit. And if the business does not make profit, then it doesn't stay in business, so therefore it goes out of business, so therefore it has missed its only purpose for being there. Now, if incidental to the profit-making program, they save your life in the hospital, or the doctor renders you a service that makes you happier, or makes your smile brighter, or alleviates your psoriasis, that's purely collateral to the central business of business, which is profit. So always remember, boys and girls, the business of business is profit. And the business of a hospital is business. So the business of a hospital is profit. Now, there are many ways to make profit, and sometimes dumping you on Skid Row may be one of those modalities. So, the next part of the story, dealing with hospitals, deals with the first rule in medicine is to do no harm, but doing harm is precisely what some Los Angeles hospitals are being accused of when it comes to patients who happen to be homeless. Homeless patients. As CNN's Anderson Cooper reports, the claim is that hospitals don't like dealing with homeless patients who are often uninsured and sometimes unpleasant to treat. They smell bad. So they literally dump them onto the streets of Skid Row in Los Angeles, California, even if the patients come from other places in Los Angeles or Los Angeles County and are in no condition to fend for themselves. And while there have been allegations of hospital dumping for years, people only started paying attention to hospital dumping because of a videotape recorded by a camera outside of a homeless shelter in Los Angeles, California. And the tape shows a 63-year-old homeless woman named Carol Ann Reyes wandering in the street. And the pictures may seem unremarkable, but the story that goes with it is disturbing. And Reyes, a homeless woman of 62, had just been discharged from the Kaiser Permanente Bellflower Hospital, where after taking a fall, she had been treated for 3 days. Now, isn't that just real special? So let me put my mark in the margin, and we'll take it up right there next time. Hospital dumping on the Law Hour and editorial review when we come back tomorrow night. In the meantime, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard daily worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour or the Law School, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website as well. Well, our time is about up. We'll have to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.